welcome to an all-new Great Moments in Weed History.
Coming at you for the first time ever from our brand new home studio here in Potland, Oregon. That's right, for those of you who followed my moving journey over the last few episodes, it is now complete. I'm very excited to be in a new city for me, and such a weedy one. I can't wait to explore everything Oregon cannabis has to offer, but gotta say, still just settling in, and I am incredibly excited to get right into this latest episode, which is about the legendary, although very few people have heard the legend, it seems, film called Ganjasaurus Rex. This is a no-budget monster movie from the 1980s made by local weed growers up in Humboldt County, California. Even more exciting, on March 23rd, so just a few weeks from now, I'm going to be up at the, well, actually, I'm going to be down. Used to be up in Humboldt. I'm going to have to get used to saying I'm heading down to Humboldt, because I'm going to be at the Mateel Center in Southern Humboldt to help host a free screening of Ganjasaurus Rex right in the community where it was filmed. Many members of the original cast and crew are going to be on hand, and that screening, that free screening, is going to be followed by a little something they are calling the Ganjasaurus Rex Review, a cryptid themed burlesque show. Let your imagination run wild. I certainly am. I'm going to be, I think, co-hosting that burlesque. So if you live in the area, please do come out. If you know people in Humboldt, please let them know. Now, on this program, my guest for this exploration of Ganjasaurus Rex is going to be, well, the absolute perfect guest to talk to about Ganjasaurus Rex, the one, the only, John Gabris. You know and love John as the host of the High and Mighty podcast. I've been on there as a guest myself. You've probably seen him on HBO Max. The show is called 101 Places to Party Before You Die. And he is a frequent guest on one of my favorite podcasts, Comedy Bang Bang. Now, settle in, because this is an epic tale. This is the Ballad of Ganjasaurus Rex, with a whole long, weedy backstory. But before I give you any context, let's just jump right into the deep end with a few clips from the film taken completely out of context.
Hey, what are you watching there? Is that a Japanese monster movie?
No, it's the news.
You're now viewing actual live footage of Kronosaurus herbivore's Ganjasaurus Rex. Pretty scary. All the rest of the news right after this.
Wow.
Oh,
my God.
Did you see that thing?
It's absolutely incredible.
What's it doing here?
Also, before we dig into this episode, I do want to say a quick thank you to everyone who supports this show on Patreon. You can join us at greatmomentsinweedhistory.com and help support us in telling these stories, in recovering this lost cannabis history, in sharing it with people all over the world. And beyond that, just building a beautiful community of people who love this plant. And you can join us at greatmomentsinweedhistory.com. On top of everything else, this was just a really fun episode for me to spend the hour seshing and getting lit with somebody who I think is so hilarious and so generous in his comedic approach to sharing a story like this, and so kind in his words about this very podcast. So I had a ton of fun just sitting down with Gabris talking about Ganjasaurus Rex. I think that really comes through in the episode, and I think you will appreciate it all the more if you get in the mood by rolling up a little cannabis sequoia of your own. You're going to know what I'm talking about. in a minute, but I am hearing from you. Yes, you, dear listener, that despite the epic proportions of this episode, you yourself are not nearly as lit as you'd like to be. And while that is a lamentable situation, it is one that can be easily remedied. All you have to do, and say it with me, longtime listeners, is simply hit pause. And you can use that time at your leisure to roll yourself a joint, or to split a blunt, or to pack a bong, or to endabulate a dab, or to eat some weed right off the plant the way Gonjosaurus Rex would do it. Whatever it takes to get you where you want to be, because I promise you this one thing, that when you hit unpause, because you're ready to roll, well then, my friends, we'll all be ready to roll into another great moment in weed history. You know, it's no exaggeration to say this podcast runs on coffee and weed. And lately, the coffee has been top shelf because of our new sponsor, Vigilante Coffee. I grind my beans daily, no pun intended, and I do the whole pretentious hipster pour over thing every morning. And I gotta say, I really enjoy thinking about where my coffee came from and how it was grown and processed, just like weed. And just like weed, it's worth it to get the best coffee you can afford. And the good news is, if you brew your own at home, really good coffee is an affordable luxury. That's why I'm thrilled to have Vigilante Coffee on the podcast and in my mug each and every morning. Vigilante is a specialty coffee roaster that sources their beans directly from small, award-winning farms around the world and then roasts them to perfection. They support ending the war on drugs, and they want to support this podcast too, because they believe that all you really need is coffee and weed. Amen. So treat yourself to a bag of their Golden Bean award-winning Dank blend, which has just returned for its fourth year. Dank is 80% Guatemalan and 20% Ethiopian. Brew that up nice and strong and pair it with a puff or two of good weed in the morning, and I guarantee you will be up and at them. To learn more or to order their amazing coffee, check out their website, vigilantecoffee.com, or you can visit one of their cafes. And if you buy a pound of those beans, well, please tell them Beans sent you. VigilanteCoffee.com. Hey, Gabrus, welcome back. Our first ever returning guest on Great Moments in Weed History.
Man, it's been a long time, Bean, and I'm excited to be back. Always. I'm always excited to talk to you about whatever weird shit you're brewing up over there. So I'm stoked.
Oh, couldn't be happier to have you on the show. I think this is the perfect episode to talk with you. You were the first person and only person that came to mind. That's going to become clear in a moment. And of course, you know, such a good friend to myself, to this program, to the plant, to the weed community. Really,
bless up, please.
All right. Well, if you're going to say, I'll get us going.
Oh, okay. Well, I got my High and Mighty branded PAX Era here. I'll be hitting that because I'm inside recording.
I think anytime you have branded paraphernalia of your own.
Yeah, right. It's okay. Permission to use. Might as well get a little mini plug. These are still for sale, team.
Absolutely. And this podcast is still sponsored by Half Joints. the joint you lit earlier, forgot about, and then we're like, do I have time to roll up another joint before this? Nah, that's a pretty decent half joint. Available at halfjoints.com.
Have you ever been in that situation where you go over to your ashtray and there's four half joints in there? You're about to roll one and you're like, all right, clean the fucking dishwasher here. It's like, just smoke these four things. Get them out of rotation. Just take them all to the dome.
Well, in the very early days of social media, I was working at the High Times Cannabis Cup in Amsterdam. I'm going to take that again. I was working at the Cannabis Cup in Amsterdam. Fuck those guys. And we were judging all this weed, and it was a very short amount of time to judge a lot of weed. And somebody posted a picture of an ashtray with like 43 quarters joints.
Right, because you're not going to take up full J to the dome for taste testing. Oh, you're not going to taste 40 full gram joints in a day.
No, but we could hear the screams of anguish coming from like the Nebraskas of the world seeing that right. ashtray. And the comments were all like, somebody's going to smoke all that, right?
Well, that's funny. Even just coming from New York in the early aughts, where I would like ash my bowl into an ashtray and then see like a speck of green and be like, well, you know, like use my lighter to knock some of the charred parts off and pull the speck of green and put it back in the bowl. Then you move to LA and it's like pre-roll city and it's legal. And you're just like, well, you know, you're just throwing like half a joint into the fucking, into the dry forests of Malibu. No.
Well, I can assure all listeners that all my half joints do get smoked. Anybody contributing to this show through Patreon, we are fully efficient in our use half of your joints, resources.
Half beers and half chubs get used to their maximum. Over here. Got a half a joint, finish it. Half a beer, slam it. Half chub, full completion. full release.
living that life of my 40s. Well, we're going to talk today a story that actually originates from one of the weediest places on earth, that is Humboldt County, California, America's weed basket. You are widely acknowledged and celebrated with all good reason as somebody who loves films, who loves maybe what you might call the world of B-movies, action films, genre films, the guilty pleasures of the cinematic world, if you will. I gotta ask, had you ever heard of the movie we're here to talk about today, Gonjosaurus Rex, prior to this?
No, I have not. I mean, prior to you introducing me to it, you did introduce me to it about a few months ago. So before that, no idea about this movie. And that does not make me an outlier.
It's called Citizen Kane. I know.
Bud was the sled, man. Yeah, no, I had not heard about this at all. And I consider myself a weedy guy and a movie guy. So for the two of those, for that Venn diagram, for me to have not heard about this or not at least watched a clip of it on YouTube or saw some shit of it, like, so to me, hearing about it and then watching the little I do want to watch the whole movie. I think I will need like a you know, a special strain and like my phone to be in a lockbox. But it is intriguing, and I mean you're gonna go into more detail, but I just want to lay out my thesis statement of like, this hits me in like five of my sweet spots. Even just like the little clips I've seen from the movie, it's like, it's DIY, it's anti-authority, it's pro-cannabis, it's pro-farmer, it's anti like feds. It's got like, it's just got like all the hallmarks of something. And then it's mystical and magical, and people take the plant seriously. These are all things I just really like in life. Didn't think you could find it all in one film. Still does not mean I'm like I'm going to watch this thing every Friday for the rest of my life.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm working on a theatrical cut to maybe streamline it for modern audiences. But that aside, I will say, you know, I think longtime listeners of this podcast probably know that I'm consider myself a weed guy. I had no conscious conception of this movie, man. I was up in Humboldt County about a year ago. I was doing a benefit show up there for the small farmers who are really kind of struggling against sort of the hyper-capitalization of cannabis and the corporatization of cannabis. So, you know, question, why would you do a benefit show for weed farmers? Don't they have money in weed? Right now, they just have weed. But somebody at this benefit pulled me aside. Somebody has really become a good friend over the last year and was like, you ever heard of this movie, Gontosaurus Rex? And it turned out the whole thing had been filmed within, you know, 15 miles of where we were and all local people in it. You know, I guess aside from Gontosaurus Rex, came from Japan, if you follow the canon of the film. And then I had this little flash. Do you remember Kim's video in New York that, like, I saw it on the shelf once and didn't rent it? And I of course, regret that now. But what I'd love to do is sort of tell you the story of the making of this film right along with everyone listening.
Oh, gladly. Gladly. I'm very curious. I mean, it's fun because based on the little clip I watched for research, you can kind of guess what the fucking backstory is in a cool way. And so I'm very curious to hear more details. Let it rip, B.
Yeah, well, let's start with Humboldt County itself. This is a rural county on the coast in Northern California. I think everybody listening to this has strong associations, if whether you've been there or not, or you know much about it.
You know of it, at least. Yeah.
So what are your...
'Cause I've never been to Humboldt. I know of it, but I'm an East Coast kid growing up, so like there was never like the idea to make a sojourn up there or anything like that. But now I want, like you said earlier, it's probably one of the most weedy places made me go in my head and start thinking of like what other places are classified as like weedy. And I was thinking Amsterdam, Jamaica, and Humboldt are maybe like the three, if you had to, like, you know, just profile a place for like cannabis consumption. Morocco for hash or something like it.
I was just gonna say the Rif Mountains in Morocco have, you know, a 1,000-year-long tradition of cultivation. India, Pakistan, some of Southeast Asia, you know, each of those places obviously has its own flavor, but I would say in North America,
it's objectively Humboldt in America. Yeah, yeah. It's the Emerald Triangle.
Actually, I don't want to get in any trouble. Mendocino County is amazing. Trinity County is amazing. We're talking about Humboldt today, and so we should really, really start with like, how did that happen? How did this rural community become so associated with cannabis? And you're going back to the 1960s. You're going back to sort of back to the land hippie era stuff. But before that, what happened is you had two industries up in Humboldt that were keeping people employed and the backbone of that county's industry, which was fishing and logging. Both of them, spoiler alert, they cut down all the trees that were profitable and they split. And they fished until it was no longer profitable to commercially fish.
Americans, capitalism-wise, were pretty similar to Jojo, the idiot circus boy with his pretty little pet. And he just pet it and pet it to like tear its head off, like from Tommy Boy. That's just what we do. We're like, look, we stumbled upon a new industry. It seems like we can make some money. Well, let's absolutely ravage it and burn it all to the ground in the next 6 months and move on.
Yeah. So a byproduct of this is land became really, really inexpensive up there. At the same time, you sort of had a lot of hippies wanting to move out of the city and kind of make their own scenes, whether that was just a little homestead or some kind of organized commune. And it turns out it's super fucking hard to live off the land.
There's a reason we stopped doing it as a people. Like, it's not it's not fully easy. Postmates rule.
Yes, indeed. And so what a lot of people, you know, this was a group of people who certainly weren't opposed to weed. And what they came to realize is just by growing a small amount of weed, you could really subsidize your way of life for the whole year, and also do something that they really believed in, that weed was a good thing. People should have access to it. It's a medicine. And so this influx happened in the 60s, in the 70s. Yes, it was always against the law and people might get busted, but you were also so far off the map, almost, in a way. It's called the Lost Coast in a lot of places. Like, it's really hard to access this land. So people were largely left alone until, do you want to guess, as a child of the 80s, do you want to guess who came into power and might have changed this lovely little Hidden Valley weed farms dynamic they had going?
I couldn't imagine. I couldn't dare to come up with an answer. Yeah, but it reeks of some Reagan-ass shit, of course.
Leading medical researchers are coming to the conclusion that marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug in the United States, and we haven't begun to find out all of the ill effects, but they are permanent ill effects.
Also, it just reeks of, like, America's whole new vibe of, like, oh, look, there's a bunch of people, like, kind of figuring out lives for themselves and not harming anyone. It's like, but we're not directly benefiting from their existence. It's like, all right, you know what to do. Shut it down. Arrest them. Steal it or burn it. Fuck it. Yeah. Oh, disheartening. I mean, I've watched some documentaries about early Humboldt, early, you know, NorCal weed world and stuff like that. So I know what is coming, but it's never been about the beginning of it. It's always been about when the crackdown and backlash starts.
Yeah. And so the other thing people really started to do, and this is, you know, ties right into this story, is up in Humboldt, you're about 7-8 hours from San Francisco and about 9 hours from Portland. You're not in either city's sort of cultural watershed.
Right.
So they created a culture of their own, and they created these really vibrant communities. And because everyone was doing quite well, but not, shall we say, paying any taxes on that money, but they were very community-minded people.
Cash businesses.
Cash business. They taxed themselves by creating a volunteer fire department, by creating community schools, community hospices. It was and is to this day. Many of these institutions are still up and running and serving that community. You know, it's sort of unlike any place I've ever been in my life, and certainly in the United States, in that, you know, local gets a lot of lip service. But up there, it was by necessity and by this sense of mutual support.
Yeah, that's fucking cool, though. That's like, that shit makes me super happy. That we always see, like, these weird futuristic worlds in movies and sci-fi, and, like, it's never that. It's never like, and we've, you know, it's always like, it sucks because it's in America, it can't last. Uncle Sam's not getting his slice. He's going to come by with his fucking extortion racket and get his piece.
Did you? I think you did. I think you read ahead in the workbook here. But did you ever go to camp in the 80s?
Yeah, I went to 4-H camp out in Riverhead, Long Island, like a sleepaway camp for a week. I enjoyed camp life.
Well, I think that's because you did not go to the camp I'm referring to, which is the campaign against marijuana planting.
Oh, the camps. Yeah. C-A-M-P. Yeah.
Little trick question there.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm just going to slice in the part where you're like, yeah, it was really fun.
I forgot that that's what it was called, too. Camp. Yeah. That's so annoying.
So fucking annoying. And so this was this effort in the Reagan years, you know, by the early 1980s, you have this effort from the federal government and the state government of California to actively target these weed growers, specifically up in Humboldt and the Emerald Triangle. And we are talking about people with, you know, small grows, you know, 100 plants or less, 50 plants or less. And you are talking about helicopter raids. You're talking about armed convoys. And these are in communities that are, you know, very rural, very small population. There's, you know, no reason to do this other than to flex. And they are, in essence, trying to send the message, we are going to eradicate the cannabis plant. We're not just going to bust some people.
This is not a deterrence. This is like, we're wiping this shit out. We're getting crack into the black communities, and we're going to get weed to knock the hippies. And this way, like, weirdly enough, a lot of these people might be voting a certain way or have a certain set of beliefs, and now they've been criminalized and disenfranchised in specific ways by the government. When you hear about this shit, when you hear about like the effort, the amount of money that was spent to stop the growth of weed is disproportionate to the amount of money weed was bringing in. Like, it's like we can't have this. And it's like, oh, we just get government funding to be anti-drug, and then that'll get us a few choppers to go bust fucking Aunt Mary and her fucking 60 plants or whatever. Fucking nightmares.
But you do have to hand it to them. I mean, it worked.
No, look, weed is gone.
weed is gone. So, you know, I mean, got to give the devil their due. Well, spoiler alert, there's at least half a joint of weed left in the world. But although it is, by you know, I'm projecting that to be gone pretty soon. But so this effort, this completely just irrational, oppressive, insane, you know, these are military style raids on people and whole communities. They, in essence, did not know who they were fucking with. They did not know how dedicated people were to this plant and to this way of life. And they did not, crucially, understand how organized and cohesive this community of growers was, in a way that they couldn't always show above ground. But as we talked about how they had built all of these community institutions, I want to describe a couple of other ones that they created in this period of the camp raids. One is a radio station called KMUD, which is still operating.
Awesome.
Which is still completely community run, and which was funded by money from weed growers for the express purpose of broadcasting in real time, hey, there's a convoy of camp vehicles going up Salmon Creek Road right now. You know, look out. Hey, we've got helicopters heading west over this mountain ridge.
That was Spirit in the Sky. I hope you guys are rocking there. Now, just a heads up to all our lovely listeners. For KMUD up on Salmon Creek Road, you got a convoy coming your way, so you might want to hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back.
83 degrees, 12:14, chance of helicopters, 85%. But because if you've, you know, Having been up there to Humboldt many times over the last 15 years, one thing that you realize is when people tell you how long it will take to get to their farm, they do not include the 45 minutes of back road switchbacks.
Once you're after off you, the main, yeah, once
you're technically
at their address. Yeah. I've done a handful of like camping on people's properties in California, not even in deep NorCal. And you're like, and at that moment you arrive at our gate. And from there, it's just another 11 miles to get to where you're going to be sleeping. You're like, Jesus. So I can only imagine. Yeah.
And that 11 miles is at 5 miles an hour half the time.
So. Right.
But so it would give people time to effectively bug out. And it also put a spotlight on what was going on. They also created something called the Citizens Observation Group and some related organizations of people who were willing to, in essence, monitor the police. I don't want to say spy on the police because there are public servants. We should be able to see what we were doing, but who really risked a lot to even down to like, hey, they made a bunch of reservations at the hotel for next weekend. So we're anticipating, you know, everyone local was more than happy to pass this information along to the Citizens Observation Group. They would broadcast it on the radio, and this was a big part of defending this community.
Dude, it sounds like a fucking occupying force in a way, you know? It like seems like Andor. Where, like, and to me, like David versus Goliath, especially if Goliath is like trying to squash a beautiful plant, then I am fucking on board with David here. And not just this... Bean in stock, David.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was an occupying force. And you know, it's interesting that this is sort of an era of the Cold War. And so, of course, we're always having military adventures abroad, whether they're acknowledged or not. But I really believe that part of this was, in essence, hey, this is some good practice. Like, we can helicopter raid things, we could do these coordinated campaigns, we can spend some of this military money and always, of course, have our hands out for more. And now they've met what I'm going to say with love and respect is the Ewoks of weed.
Yes, that's exactly. Yeah, that's why I dig it so much.
Now, I want to say far, far, far too many people up in Humboldt and, of course, all over suffered the brunt of this. Lots of people went to prison for years or decades because of camp. A lot of people were completely traumatized simply by being exposed to these raids. There is an entire generation of children who grew up in the 80s in Humboldt County who saw this as something happening to their parents and their neighbors and their friends. And whether your family was growing weed or not, and I think probably pretty much everybody was, but this was a daily fact of life. And it's really left this dark shadow over that community. So I, you know, we're here to talk about a really fun cultural
art that came out of that. Yeah. But there, it, like a lot of these movements, it's coming from some pain and, you know, fucked up government shenanigans as usual.
Yeah. And so one other community institution up there, there was a community theater operating up there that was a mix of the local people, people who had moved up there to live this back to the land, weed hippie lifestyle. And they were putting on plays, putting on shows that reflected what went on in the community and helping people process this. And because you don't have the entertainment options of a big city nearby, they were really popular. They were well known. Their plays were very well attended. They were sort of...
It's the only show in town, as the kids say. Yeah. You're not going to drive 8 hours to Portland to go see a play if you can have one that you can walk to stone to the bone.
Absolutely. And so this theater group, in essence, gave rise to Ganja Saurus Rex, the hero of today's
the titular episode. Film. Gondosaurus Rex, a character in the film Gondosaurus Rex, the movie we are discussing today here on Great Moments in Weed History. Man, I love that shit. You hear, like, it must drive the government crazy to hear, like, yeah, well, with their own money, they kind of launched their own society. Oh, yeah? What do they have? Fire department, radio station, theater company, babysitters. You know, like, none of it is, like, police or fucking they are, you know, they're making blank. Like, it's all just, like, it sounds fucking fun up there. Let's rent out a block of rooms and arrest these fucking people.
Yeah, and then we can do some fishing on our off days. I will just pick up Humboldt County, amazing wilderness. You have a long stretch of just beautiful coastline on the Pacific. You have fishing, you have hunting, cheese. There's a ton of beautiful things.
The Humboldt fog. Yeah.
Yeah. but this film, in essence, came out of, you know, people being really beat down by what was going on in their community, constantly processing this trauma and constantly, fighting their own government just to survive. And I think in times like that, it's quite natural to sort of wish for an avenging mythical beast to...
For millennia, this has been a foundational element of storytelling, has been like we are an oppressed people in whatever capacity. And in order for us to feel free, we've fabricated a thing that will defend our people, that will protect our people, that will avenge our people. I mean, that's what superhero comics are. That's what golems from Jewish cults, like all this stuff is like, we feel powerless or at least overrun by the situation we're in. Like we need a symbolic, like, and that's what the Humboldt heads did with Gondosaurus Rex. so when you finally see Gondosaurus Rex, it is really funny. Like, again, like being said, these people are living like just about off the grid, you know, like, so the VF, they're not anywhere near Skywalker Sound or fucking, just because up there in Marin is where there's some stuff happening. It's not close enough for these guys to get any help from the fucking, George Lucas's VFX studio.
No, but they did have a rubber glove. So
yes, and that coconuts spray painted green.
So at this point, I want to play for everybody. I went up there and I just got very excited about this film, as I'm sure you can all tell when I heard about it. And I wanted to, and I'm working on doing some screenings and trying to like build a cult following around Gondosaurus Rex. So I went up and I interviewed the originator of the idea for Gondosaurus Rex and two of the people who were in the film and who were a part of this community theater program that in essence collectively created Gondosaurus Rex. I also want to shout out the director of the film, Ursi Reynolds. I'm going to play for everybody this little sizzle reel that you watched earlier, and then I'd love to just hear what your impressions of it were going in cold when you watched it.
My name is Rob Sears, and I came up with the idea for Gondosaurus Rex, a pipe dream, as it were.
And how has that changed your life?
Gondosaurus Rex is a movie about some back-to-the-land hippies who are just trying to grow their weed so they can pay their bills and have to constantly defend themselves from law enforcement. My character, Honey, is a science nerd, and she developed a new strain called Cannabis Sequoia that grows as big as a redwood tree, which awakens this ancient creature who lived on Cannabis Sequoia back in the prehistoric times. And then the creature sort of joins in our fight against the law. The cannabis sequoia seeds are coconuts, and we painted them to look like seeds.
I played Cloud, the goofy spiritualist. Cloud was like the conscience of the community. He wasn't like thinking about the money. He wasn't thinking about camp. He was just thinking about the good of the creature.
Camp is the campaign against marijuana planting.
Humboldt County couldn't afford to attempt to suppress the marijuana cultivation. So the federal government stepped in with money.
We were in a siege on our community for some years where you never knew if your land could get confiscated. People held at gunpoint with their kids getting arrested.
And they were serious, very serious. The person in charge, he went on TV on a news show, and he basically said, if you are growing marijuana, be assured, we will find it and you will go to prison. And I was listening to this and going like, holy shit, this is like, wow, it just sent chills down my spine. So the first day of camp, the very first day, probably about 7 o'clock in the morning, but there it was, hello. Camp's here. I was probably hit 2-3 times.
In those days, you had to camouflage all your plants and you had to find little spots in the woods where maybe camp wouldn't see them. You had to hide your trails so they wouldn't see your trails from the helicopter.
Camp was coming in and doing what they're doing, trying to destroy a community and a culture. For the hippies, Gonjosaurus came up from the depths of the ocean and said, hey, how do you like this, camp? And there was the hippies like, you know, hey, keep going, keep doing it. Keep knocking down those choppers, man.
The story was basically our lives, minus the creature.
When camp hit, we put up flyers that there was going to be a big meeting. There were hundreds of people there. And we formed Citizens Observation Group. We would go out there, and I was part of COG. We would go out there and monitor the raids. And it was pretty darn scary because they were very intimidating, the police. They didn't like people watching what they were doing because they were doing some nasty stuff. It would be broadcast. I think it was a KMUD broadcast like, oh, camp is going up Miller Creek Road. Sorry, I had to mention Miller Creek Road because that's where our land was. So people can prepare themselves, either pull the plants or run out of the house and do something.
Everybody that was in the movie was volunteering. And there were a lot of people in that crowd scenes and people that let you use their house as a location. Yeah. Everything was donated. Rod Deal supplied the soundtrack.
The film ends with the local sheriff hitting the federal agent and saving Gonjosaurus. And that has been the trajectory of the legalization. It's come from the local people refusing to accept an irrational, unscientific point of view about marijuana.
Well, I'm surprised every once in a while I'll be at a party where there's a lot of young people and they'll be like, you were in Gonjosaurus Rex. I love that film. Yeah. Really? Wasn't it on somebody's worst movies list?
Yeah, it made the top three on somebody's worst movie. They said the only way they'd watch it if the whole world was destroyed and this that was the last tape they had. Sounds good to me.
I love shit like this, especially when you just see what these people really look like and act like and talk like. It's a fucking dream come true, especially for someone like me who finds these land back stoner hippie people who are above average intelligence and using it not for, you know, money. That appeals to me in such a strong way. And watching these people, and when they talk about their characterizations, like, I was the scientist. I was the spiritual conscious. Like, I was like, this rules. Like, that got me so excited.
And then I kind of want to, you know, put it in context with, like, you know, as somebody who is really has this deep love and appreciation of and knowledge about B-movies, low-budget movies, monster movies, like, how did it strike you on that level? You know, what would you be able to sell this as a concept to your monster movie friends who maybe aren't as into weed as you and I?
See, I don't know, because it is... You get into a little bit of like a hairy situation when we're talking pure like quality and style of it. But with this historical context, you're wrapping around it. That is what got me excited. So I know you were talking about putting together some screenings of it. And I do think a little preamble kind of setting up the situation there, or a little news-based sizzle reel at the start of the movie to let you know what camp's up to, could go a long way because it, I could sell this with the spiel you get, you know, that you gave me. I know that's like, for me, that's kind of important because it like sells that there's like a real fight and a real message that these people are trying to convey. They didn't spend a lot of money on it, which is good for indie filmmaking. But like, look, when these people aren't filmmakers, they aren't, they're artists, they're interesting, intelligent people. But like, it doesn't mean what they did wasn't an absolute, you know, like outcome. Like it just on paper, if you're going to put this on, if you're going to be like, hey, do you want to watch Gonjosaurus Rex or do you want to watch, you know, Empire Strikes Back? You might choose Empire.
they both have Ewoks from what I've just heard. But I didn't put the Ewoks in the wrong film. Do I?
You did. Unfortunately,
I can't take that kind of heat.
Ewoks are in Jedi. Oh my God. What, hold on. There's a group of guys dressed as stormtroopers outside my apartment right now.
I gotta shut this down. It's great talking to you. What you said too reminded me of. So I was trying to just figure out like what is the existing, if any, sort of fandom around this very, very obscure film. And there's a YouTube of it, you know, with I think 20,000-30,000 views. I've found some screenings, but it's like, you know, really in need of rediscovery. But I found this one podcast, getting into what you were talking about, where they sort of watch really, you know, movies they've never seen that are very obscure, and then they have their first conversation about it on the mics. These two Irish guys, and the one guy goes first and he's like, you know, it's a bunch of shite or whatever. And the other guy, it's like, well, you know, I actually read up. I couldn't figure out what the fuck I was watching. And I found out, like, did you know they were real weed growers and that, like, they were really getting raided by this helicopters? And the first guy just goes, oh, well, aren't I a big asshole then? Like, he just needed that context.
Right. And I think it's true because it places it, because you're not watching this movie for its merits as a film. Like, if you want to watch a monster movie, there are a few out there.
And so I would say, you know, if you're just fired up after listening to this and you're like, I'm all in on Gonjosaurus Rex and you want to watch it on YouTube, you know, I think you're forewarned at this point. And it is a watch to be enjoyed with a few friends or that special someone, just so that you have somebody to riff with and bounce your own jokes off of, and sort of, you got to kind of Mystery Science Theater it yourself. But at the same time, spliced into the movie are clips of actual raids by camp, including that happened to people who were, you know, main cast members of the film. So it's like,
yes, it works editing wise. Of like, look, the spiritual leader got arrested. It's like, yeah, well, the actor got arrested. We happen to get it on camera. And it gives it production value because now you got a lot of choppers in your movie.
We only got one chance to get this smashing the weed farm shot right. Oh no, I'm being told we have many chances to get this right. But those, that's not video that the government supplied. That is these people out monitoring the police. And, you know, if anybody knows anything about the police, they love being filmed while they're abusing people's rights. And they're not at all vindictive about it.
No,
yeah,
no, they, you, there is no good. I dare you to find footage of a cop breaking a camera. It's impossible. Yeah,
this has never happened. In case we haven't sold you yet, I'm not going to do any major spoilers, but you know, a few of the plot points to the film, and just give people a sense of the world of Gotcha, because that's what really, this is going to be a tent pole. You know, it's going to be theme park rides. It's going to be cruises.
A kid show. Gonjosaurus Rex Jr. Yeah.
But so what, in essence, the inciting incident, the thing that sets all of this off is, and I think it's really cool to just highlight as well, the director of the film was a woman, and the sort of main character hero of the film is this woman named Honey in the film, who is a scientist, and she develops a new variety of cannabis called Cannabis Sequoia.
Say less. That is my fucking nickname.
That, I think if you were going to wrestle.
Yeah. And in this corner, standing 6'2" from the Emerald Triangle, 305 pounds, it's Cannabis Sequoia.
But so she develops this new kind of cannabis, and it is a sequoia tree is in essence very much like a redwood tree, if that helps people visualize what I'm talking about. The tallest trees in the world, they are, of course, all over the place up in Humboldt. We sometimes refer to going into Humboldt as going beyond the redwood curtain, because it is one of the big geographical features that made it such an isolated place. So we're talking about cannabis plants that are going to grow thousands of feet in the air. And when these seeds, which are coincidentally as large as a coconut and very much the shape of a coconut and possibly coconuts painted green, as you might have mentioned, they're so powerful that when they are planted underground, the sheer vibrations, very hippie concept of them.
The energy, man. Yeah. The
energy, man, of them starting to sprout reaches all the way to the ocean underground and signals to this mythical beast who once fed off of cannabis sequoia in the primordial era.
Man, that fucking... And it's me. I just come out of the ocean. Oh, you guys sparking this? It's like, no, it's Conjosaurus Rex. My weed name is Hercuweeds.
Well, I've been keeping this low during the actor's strike, but there's a very short list to play Gonjosaurus Rex in the remake. And
I would like nothing more, please. I'm with Don Buchwald and Associates. I'll send you my agent's info. They all have no idea who you're referring to when you say, I want to talk to John Gabers. They'll be like, who?
I know Don. I used to sell him some weed. So another really cool thing in the film is that they show you all of these aspects of life in Humboldt through the narrative devices of this film. So we see what they used to call them up there is gorilla gardens, and not gorilla the animal, but gorilla this...
Gorilla, yeah, yeah.
Because you couldn't just, as you might today, grow a bunch of big, beautiful weed plants next to your homestead. You had to go out in the woods, disguise your trails, and sort of hack out a little space to plant your plants. And there's a scene in the movie where they're putting on camouflage and they're doing this. And it really shows you what people went through just to grow weed back in that era.
That's the other thing too. Like you're talking about this, like, yeah, and they went up there and grew weed. Like even without the government interfering, like it is not easy to like run in a farm and a mini pop-up cannabis industry. Yeah. Like that's what's crazy is like, it's already a difficult process. Then you throw like the weight of the federal government against you in that situation. And you're just stacking fucking drama and it ain't easy.
And the thing that really, it's like, no, I like, we really touched on obviously the obvious horrible parts of this, but something you come to realize talking to the old timers, this older generation that really lived in the all out prohibition era and would put like 10 gallons of water on their back and full camo with like twigs and shit and would disguise their plants. You'd plant other plants around them.
Oh, that's so cool.
There was an element of cops and robbers and, you know, the people who did this tended to love that cloak and dagger aspect of it. It's just that the penalties for getting caught were so horrific. But that whole outlaw era is something that I think we all really need to do a better job of understanding and honoring, because as we talked about, now these same communities that should be benefiting the most from the end of this war are now having to face trying to make a living in the legal weed economy, and they're not being properly accommodated.
Weird. The government who tried to stop it in the 70s and 80s are now some of the major benefactors from it now, based on tax, what my fucking tax bill looks like when I walk out of a fucking dispensary. I think California state government getting a solid slice. The Fed, interesting. You guys were fucking hovering overhead 25 years ago, not letting 50 years ago, not letting this happen. Man, well, I don't know why I just thought in my head it was the year 2000.
Take me with you.
Please.
That was like the last good year. I'm sorry for any of our younger listeners.
Yeah, I mean, that's when I graduated high school. Freshman year of college, sophomore year of college, 9/11 happens, and then it feels like some good stuff sprinkled in there, but got heavy fast and kept moving.
Yeah, that's true. So some of the other just sort of characters and tropes that you will encounter in this incredible film, there is a sort of nutty professor who attempts to figure out how to communicate with Gonjosaurus Rex.
Gonjosaurus Rex that is cute. It's not really scary in any way. And that's like another layer to it, that when it does feel like Gumby or something, when it finally shows up, it's like, it's just cute.
It's kind of like an XL Gumby. I think you kind of nailed the aesthetic of Gonjosaurus. So then with all of that context, to me, one of the just pivotal scenes in the film and sort of the moment that I hope that when, first of all, I cut about a half hour out of this film to make it a tight 60 minutes, and people are set up with this historical background, this is the scene I hope people will jump up out of their seats and cheer, is you see Gonjosaurus emerge from the ocean, sort of suss out the situation, shake off, a few thousand years of watery hibernation, and she, big reveal, sees what they would do is they would come down with the helicopter, and because it was so rugged up there, there was nowhere to land. So they would lower these fucking narcs on a rope ladder, have them chop down all the plants, put all the plants into a big net, and then they would helicopter these giant nets of beautiful fresh cut weed. And of course they would always wait until the plants were just ready to harvest, because that would inflict the maximum financial and psychological damage on people. And then I know you saw in the sizzle reel Gonjosaurus Rex taking down these motherfucking helicopters.
It rules. Although I just got this visual of like a helicopter carrying a basket full of top shelf cannabis, right, ready to go, and then me taking like Viking funeral style, like a flaming bow and arrow, and shooting a flaming arrow into it, and it just bursting and like weed smoke just blowing everywhere, and like you do it to like four choppers and you just get like the entire peninsula high or whatever. It'd be so fucking rad.
Let's get in the hot box time machine and make that happen. And there is a theme. One of sort of the funnier scenes in the film is these cops, as they did camp, would have these big bonfires, because what are they going to do with all of this weed that they cut down? So they would make these big bonfires. And so, of course, there is this scene in the film where two of the growers, they can't help, as much as this is going to be so painful to them to watch, they sort of can't help but be there for the plants at this terrible moment. And then, of course, the wind shifts and they're breathing in the cannabis sequoia and feeling the effects.
Yeah, you just get that long snorkel out and just take a big rip from it.
So I don't want to, you know, I will say all's well that ends well in this story.
Yes, both... no spoilies, because I'm going to watch this in the theater with you.
Yes, but both in, you know, the world of cinema, you know, they say art imitates life and sometimes life imitates art. I don't, you know, in that my favorite line in the sizzle reel is when Joni, who played Honey, the creator of Cannabis Sequoia, says this film was basically our lives except for the creature. So the good news is that through these efforts, and we see in the movie a representation of the Citizens Observation Group under a different name and all these things they did to fight back. But the film was released in 1987 and camp went on until really just a few years ago. So it took a long time without the Gongosaurus Rex figure. But ultimately, in both cases, camp has been eradicated, not weed.
Yeah, so this is a good time to announce that you and I have been in the lab for a while working with some of the top shelf geneticists and biologists in the world designing. We have an embryo of a Gongosaurus.
Oh, we're doing this?
Yeah.
Damn, okay.
We got all these little embryos in like a shaving cream canister, like Dennis Nedry from Jurassic Park.
Welcome to Gongosaurus Island. And it's just all cannabis sequoia plants and weed Godzillas.
Man, sounds fun to me.
Yeah, we gotta get in before the rents go up, you know.
Yeah.
It's gonna get gentrified, but for right now. But no, I mean, I think that's, you know, it's wild that, you know, you're sort of now into like some of the third and even fourth generation growers up in Humboldt,
right?
Direct descendants of people who went up in the late 60s to start these homesteads. I've been fortunate enough, blessed enough, even going back quite a ways when it was much, much, much more secretive up there, to have access to people and some of these farms and to see that way of life. Hand-built homes of found wood and, you know, just a real beautiful way of life. And it does still exist up there. It is really threatened by how legalization has been, here comes a weed pun, rolled out. But it's worth saving and it can be saved. And my real idea is that it needs to, it's not my idea that I originated it, but my belief is it needs to become like wine country in the way that tourists can go up there and experience that way of life.
Yeah, when you're like, oh, I love wine and I love this region. Oh, it's fun to go there and go to your favorite vineyards and join a club and get like, yeah, that we need to have that. There should be more cannotourism anyway. Like that seems to be something that you could really push for. And I want to go so bad, you know, and without even this existence of these things yet, but that would be so great. Visit a farm, smoke a few of their strains, you have a flatbread with some friends, and then you get in the fucking Humboldt Uber and get to another one and try some of their strains and have some fucking grapes or whatever. You know, like, I love that shit.
There's so many other beautiful natural wonders of the world up there. There is where some of the Ewok scenes were filmed in Humboldt County in Return of the Jedi.
Good work, sir.
I edited the other one out to save the money. And it's like, that's what one of my hopes in trying to maybe like resuscitate this film and build a cult audience around it is that it will inspire people to go visit Humboldt. And there are some great tour companies operating up there now, and I anticipate there being a lot more of that as things move forward. And you know, what's kind of ironic is a lot of people went up there to be left the fuck alone. And now they're being told, oh, you won this war against the government, but you are still going to struggle economically. Now you've got to get a bunch of tourists, everybody's favorite. But it will be a very unique kind of tourist. It will be people who go up there with a real love of the plant and the culture, I think.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be people who are like bachelor parties and shit like that.
Woo!
Yeah.
Show us your plants!
Yeah, they all got penis hats on and shit like that.
So I think kind of bringing it home, I so appreciate you, you know, coming on to chop it up with us about this movie. And I wanted to let people know where they can check out your podcasts about movies and dip into those worlds of like action movies and that you were talking about.
Oh, yeah. I got a podcast called Action Boys. We're at actionboys.biz. It's a Patreon podcast. But we got some free episodes and we're talking about classic action movies from the 70s, 80s, and 90s for longer than the run times of the movies, which is, you know, not for everyone, but maybe it's for you. And also, I got a travel show that has some weedy elements to it on Max called 101 Places to Party Before You Die. And in the near future, we're going to be touring that live. So come see us or get the live stream tickets or whatever. I'm always doing some shit. You can follow me at Gabrus and see what I got going on and support me there. Bean, I'm always down to learn at the Emerald Altar from my acolyte. No, you're not my acolyte. I'm your acolyte, Bean. So any chance to chop it up with you about weed and hear more about Humboldt Place that at some point we will go together in the near future. We've had plans for me and you being there together fall through like three times at this point. So it's got to work at some point in the near future.
Yeah, we've been a little bit on Humboldt time, as they say up there. But, the thing about Humboldt time is it does come around.
Eventually, you know, you got to be there. Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot of hanging around until it happens. And, you know, I talked in a previous episode of this show. I was just up there recently doing a little seasonal agricultural work, as they say, and had such an amazing time. And it's just a place that, like, I want to share that experience with people. And I think, you know, it'll be a big part of if people can come, especially from places where weed is not legal, and you can not only go to somewhere where weed is legal, but where you can experience sort of the best of weed culture and then go home and tell your friends, tell your neighbors, that really, really helps spread the message of like, you know, we can often talk about the things that we don't want to happen, like people getting fucking arrested and cancer patients having to go through chemo without weed. But we also really need to portray this world that we want to live in, right, where cannabis is integrated into socializing, cannabis is integrated into travel.
You like burning down a J or ripping bongs, go into Humboldt, you know, like that's the when in Rome of it. So just get in there and enjoy. That's the kind of Rome that Nero wouldn't be fiddling while it burned, because he'd be fucking stripping balls.
Or he'd be doing like a 28-minute dead cover jam on the fiddle. All right, man. Well, I'm going to spark up one more time with you. Let's hit that signature PAX vape you got. And everyone out there, thank you so much for sharing this great moment in weed history with us, and I will see you next Weedness Day for another episode. Gabrus, thank you so much.
Later, man.
Well, that's the show, folks. Thanks so much for listening, and if you stuck around this long, please consider supporting us on Patreon. You could put $5 on it at greatmomentsinweedhistory.com, and that would really help us as we research, write, edit, and publish a new episode every Weedness Day. Great Moments in Weed History is written, produced, and performed by me, David Bienenstock, a.k.a. Bean. Special thanks to our sponsor, PAX. Go to PAX.com and use promo code GREATMOMENTS, all one word, for a big discount at checkout.